I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, the 5-1 edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, the Houston You Have a Problem, Can We Have Some of Your Players edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Jacob Morley, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, what we are going to do today is, actually, we're not going to speculate about trades. There will be plenty of time for that in the coming episodes. We're going to break down kind of a deep dive into this Houston Texans game, this Houston Texans victory. And so what we're going to do is, you and I have both watched the coach's film. So we have some takes of our own. And also, I think it's fun to marry those takes to what websites like Pro Football Focus come out with their grades. Because as always, guys, we are not just a rely solely on Pro Football Focus family. We are a trust your own eyeballs as well. And when your eyeballs and other people's eyeballs agree on something, that's usually a good thing. So, Ross, let's get started on this, man. So looking through the grades, let's start with the offense. Aaron Rodgers basically graded out as 74.8, which is slightly above average for the Green Bay Packers. What were your takes, I guess, on Aaron Rodgers from this game? Do you agree with that grade, disagree with that grade? Give me your thoughts on QB1.
Well, like I kind of mentioned it after further review, I just thought it was a mix of some of the struggles that we saw against Tampa, and then the MVP candidate that had played for the first four games. I thought Rodgers, you know, held the ball a little bit. The six throwaways were, I believe, a season high. Missed a couple of throws normally you'd hope he'd hit, but, you know, boy, other than that, man, you got to feel really good about what he was able to do in that game specifically. Obviously, his connection with Davante Adams, that was pretty special stuff from number 1-7.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. I think the sequence of plays that I think really tell the story of this game for Aaron Rodgers are him missing Davante Adams on that in-breaking route over the middle of the field, only to follow that up with, was it the very next play? If not, it was with the next couple plays, you know, hitting him for that, you know, 40 plus yard touchdown, which was also not a super accurate ball either. But then you also get the mixed bag of just unbelievable Davante Adams talking about losing that ball in the lights and him basically just knowing 12 was going to put that on him. So he stuck his hands out at the last second and just squeezed it. Like that's legend stuff. That's incredible. And so, Rodgers, like you said, mixed bag. Moving on to the wide receivers from this game, obviously the top performer for this group was Davante Adams with an elite 93.7 score, and then followed by Malik Taylor with a 74.7. Who else had? Equanimeous hardly played. Darius Shepherd with a below average score of 53.9. MVS with the below average score of 49.5. I'll start with the receivers here, Ross, because I think we can keep this really simple. I tweeted it out. Davante Adams is elite. He is an elite NFL wide receiver, top five. He needs help. And that's just basically where the Packers are at wide receiver right now. They can get by scheming some of these guys open. Davante does not need to be schemed open. He needs help. That help is probably Alan Lazard. Ross, thoughts?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you look at like yards per route run, some of the other, not necessarily sabermetrics, but just some of the other advanced numbers on Lazard. And right now he is, this season, has been playing like a top 20 or 25 receiver in the league. Now, how many receivers are in the NFL? Well, everybody basically starts three. And so you got 32 teams, that's 96 starting receivers. Lazard is playing way above average. I mean, he is in the top 20 of every statistical category on a per game basis or on a per route basis. Of course, his counting totals, his box score numbers aren't going to look, you know, like what they would because he's been hurt. But when he's been available, he's actually been a very above average, if you want to get into the terms, WR2 or a low-end WR1. If you're talking kind of like a fantasy football style way of rating guys. So I'm with you. I think that Lazard is the guy. And then I also think like Lazard kind of pushes everybody down into their appropriate slot. As far as you like Darius Shepherd as a fifth receiver, you like Marquez Valdes-Scantling as a third receiver who runs a bunch of deep stuff. If you've got that solid second guy in Lazard and the super duper duper star in Adams, I think the entire passing offense makes a lot more sense with Alan Lazard part of the deal.
Yes, and you hit exactly what I was going to say. With MVS, he is the guy that you want out there, and you want to give him two to three targets a game, and they're all 20-plus yards down the field, because I think he's proven in his career that he is what he is at this point, and that's exactly what it is. And he's going to stick around in this league for a long time because he has that ability. But he's just not a guy you trust play in and play out. And you saw it on that third down drop. Like, that's just who he is. Moving on to the tight ends, the other pass catching group. We had Jay Sternberger with a 68.8. That's a pretty average score. We have Mercedes Lewis with a 61.1. That's a below average score. Lovett had a below average score. Tanyan had a below average score, about 55. I thought the tight ends were pretty quiet, Ross, outside of Sternberger's touchdown catch. He was only had that one target. And obviously, Tanyan had that really nice deep ball that he saw. You saw his athletic ability really on display. But outside of that, pretty quiet day for the tight ends, Ross.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, Tanyan probably could have had a 60-yard touchdown if Rodgers has that throw a little bit more outside. I think a lot of people are saying it would have been a touchdown. I think the free safety probably would have hawked him. He seemed to have an angle on that deal. But regardless, a better throw would have resulted in much more than a diving catch, which is what Tanyan was able to do. Sternberger didn't do anything special on his touchdown catch, I wouldn't say. But you're looking at a guy in Tanyan that's getting a little more attention, and a guy in Sternberger. We've talked about this, or I've talked about this at length. Sternberger is right now, he's on a path, and generally, generally you're talking about the year two, late in year two, usually year three for tight ends to really hit. You add that and the fact that Sternberger pretty much took a redshirt year last year, and I'd be waiting on him until 2021 or 2022. Anything you get in 2020 seems to be gravy.
Yeah, and I think Robert Tanyan is a great example of that. He fits that model to a T as well. Okay, moving on to the Hog Mollies, the big uglies up front. Cordy Linsley leads this group with a high quality, or no, actually, excuse me, Lucas Patrick led this group this week with a high quality score of 81.1, followed by Cordy Linsley with an 80.2. That's another very high quality score. Billy Turner had a 69.7, but I do want to point out my man had an 86.5 pass blocking score at left tackle. We'll talk about that. Rick Wagner, 68.5. Elton Jenkins, 69.3. Both average scores. All three of those guys, their pass blocking scores are in the 80s, which is phenomenal. What are your thoughts on really this shuffled around offensive line, how these guys held up?
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you've got J.J. Watt on the other side and you don't give up a sack. I think Turner, my God, could you ask for anything more? You've got a guy that, you know, people were worried about having him play right tackle. Well, I'll just replace David Bakhtiari and give up zero pressures or zero hurries, zero sacks, and one quarterback knockdown while we're kind of slinging the ball all over the yard. I feel like you can't put in a lot of guys that played right guard the season before and just plug them in at left tackle and feel really, really good about it. And that's exactly what just happened with Billy Turner. Rick Wagner did what Rick Wagner has done all year, and that's slide in when he's needed at right tackle and just not have his name called. And again, are there guys like Elgton Jenkins and guys like Corey Linsley where they play so well sometimes that you notice them? Yeah. But not being noticed is also the hallmark of what I would call very sought after offensive line play. More often than not, you're going to be kind of, it's not a great recognition is not in general great for offensive linemen, though obviously the elite ones like, you know, Quentin Nelson, et cetera, you know, that doesn't necessarily apply.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Yeah, and there's a school of thought out there too, Ross, about offensive line play and how you don't pay guys huge money in the offensive line because, like, and Peter Bukowski and I were talking about this actually a couple days ago and just talking about Bakhtiari and you pay this guy. And there is a school of thought out there that offensive line, more than any other positional group on the team, is very much a unit. And when you get five and you look at those five guys that the Packers trotted out there, who's the weak link? Those guys are all solid NFL offensive linemen, two really good offensive NFL linemen. So where was the weak link? You didn't really have one, and they played really well. And like you said about Big Billy Turner, I mean, my goodness, the Gutekunst getting ragged for signing him to what he signed to play guard, kind of just pulling one over our eyes again. Because look what he's done this year at tackle. If he continues this level of play at right tackle and left tackle when he needs to for this season, that's a slam dunk of a free agent signing 2 years ago. So you got to tip your cap there to old Goody about what he's been able to do and what he really envisioned for this team and this offensive line moving forward. But go ahead and moving to the defensive side of the ball. Let's start with the big boys on the defensive side of the ball. So big guys, as far as grades, we had, I believe, Kenny Clark led the way with his grade. He had a 77.7, which is a very high quality score. Kingsley Kiki, 72.9, which is a slightly above average to pretty good grade. Let's see who else. Dean Lowry had a good grade, 71.9, played well. Billy Winn, 70. That's spot on average for Pro Football Focus, which this Packers front line, that's a welcome breath of fresh air. And then Montrevious Adams, 66.4, which is also a pretty average grade, but not a bad grade. So, Ross, how do you think these front guys played?
I thought it was fine. I didn't see anything crazy out of the ordinary. I thought Kenny Clark was good. I think Kenny Clark finishing pass rushes against a guy like Deshaun Watson, when you're that much bigger than an elite athlete, is tough. I think getting for a guy like Kenny, getting Deshaun Watson on the ground is difficult, but I think PFF credited him with 4 hurries. I got no problem with that. I think he was consistently resetting the line of scrimmage, which is a big deal, man. When you're usually on the center of the play side guard, and you're jacking him 2 yards deep into his own backfield, it's generally going to create a problem. And I think that's why you look at the team grade for run defense for the Packers. It's pretty great. Montrevious Adams getting it done repeatedly this season against the run. He might not have the juice, which I guess is fine, because Kingsley Kiki does. And that was, I thought, another excellent rush for him on what ended with the Za'Darius Smith in the grasp sack, but a really good interior pressure from him. I see that the tape is already up, or the coach's tape. I'm excited to get into it. Everything over at Packer Report TV, or excuse me, just at Packer Report, is right now just based off of TV copy. We try to get that out to you guys as soon as we can. But this interior defensive line, I think, has been much maligned, and I think this has been better, man. I think if you can get league average play from Lowry and slightly above league average play from Kiki and Adams, you're going to get blue chip play from Kenny Clark. All of a sudden, you're getting above average defensive line play, which is something that, as you mentioned, like Packers fans would go gaga over, man.
Yeah, and I think Kenny Clark is 100% the straw that stirs this drink, too. You look at what this defense has been able to do since him getting back. And really, I would say yesterday or Sunday was really his first time, like, back. Like, he is – it's not his first game back from injury anymore. He's really getting into a groove, and I thought he played really well, allowing guys around him to make plays. I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that yesterday the Packers had – as many, you know, pressures and hits on the quarterback that they did. I think that all starts with number 97 in the middle of the defense. And you see it, you know, with guys like these edge guys. Like, we'll talk about these edge players right now. Za'Darius Smith had his probably statistically best game of the season last Sunday. He graded out 72.6, which is an above average to average grade. But he had 6 total pressures and a sack. Just really was very disruptive. And then you saw Preston Smith really for the first time make some splash plays. Now, Pro Football Focus did not love him, love the entirety of his game. They graded him at a 53.7, which is a below average grade. And I guess we can talk about that. And then Jonathan Garvin, he hardly played, but he had a below average game. And then Rashawn Gary had a 65.9, which is a solid score. But Ross, talk to me about Preston Smith. Do you agree with that grade? Or was it really like he played like Preston Smith has been playing all year, sprinkled in with a couple splash plays?
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I joked about all being forgiven, and I thought it was, but you didn't see a lot of detailed rushes, successful rushes from Preston Smith. You saw a couple pressures. You saw him being close to Deshaun Watson because Deshaun Watson was running around trying to do Superman stuff. I didn't see a lot of great detailed rushes from Preston. And I thought Z looked pretty hobbled. I thought they put him in situations where he could bull rush, because I think with that ankle, change of direction was just not going to happen. Rashawn Gary doesn't look 100%, certainly doesn't look like the player that we saw earlier in the year, in my opinion, but was really solid against the run. And I thought all the edges were really solid against the run, which is a huge, huge deal. That defensive line has had so much trouble keeping the cup and being strong against tackles and tight ends and feeding the running backs inside to their help, that to see the way the Packers were able to do that on Sunday was, I think, something you can really feel good about, because it was something they struggled with mightily.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You could get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BlueWire at betonline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yes. So let's move on to the inside backers. Everybody's new favorite player, Kamal Martin, had a really solid score. High quality, 77.3 score. I mean, honestly, graded out really well across the board. Pro Football Focus really liked what he did. And I would agree with that. I thought he had a very good opening game. But after that, Pro Football Focus was not a fan of what the Packers had out there. Chris Barnes, 44.0, which is a very bad score. Ty Summers, 35.0, which is a terrible score. And somehow Oren Burks graded out as a 30.3, which is just god-awful. So Kamal Martin, I think, is a stud. I think he's very good. I think we're going to just see him get better. I don't necessarily agree with the Chris Barnes score and the reason for that. And what I think is interesting, Ross, is you look at this defense and basically the inside backers in a 3-4 defense, you have a Mike and you have a Will. And ever since Chris Barnes has switched over to that Mike spot, his grades haven't been as good. If you look at grades throughout the year for this Packers team, whoever's playing that Mike spot, Pro Football Focus just doesn't really like what they're doing. And I think a big reason for that is a lot of, you know, the Mike linebacker on defense is a lot of times described as the fullback of the defense. And what that means is, you know, Chris Barnes is going to be the guy torpedoing, you know, the fullback or torpedoing what some lead blocker to basically occupy a blocker. So guys like Kamal Martin can go in and make a play. Now, with that said, Kamal Martin replaced Chris Barnes at the Mike linebacker spot once he got hurt. But I think ultimately that's what you're going to see with these guys is Chris Barnes kind of be that guy that's going to go in and blow stuff up and let Kamal Martin run free and make plays. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Ross.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with a lot of it. I thought, you know, we got into a situation where the Packers were certainly playing more pass defense than when they were run defense. Green Bay had a big lead. And I thought the middle of the field defenders for Green Bay were abysmal. I thought this was one of Chandon Sullivan's worst games as a Packer. Raven Green did some nice things, but him in coverage was bad. He gave up 5 catches on 7 targets. Were the backers bad in coverage, constantly not flowing with the play, not reading the quarterback's eyes. And you had catches in those windows from slot receivers and tight ends all game long, mostly slot receivers or, you know, outside guys running crossers. I get it, man, for the number of plays that, again, all of Green Bay, period, inside backers, outside backers, whatever, played really well against a run. But Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson gave up 26 total yards, period, in their coverage. So what that tells you is all the rest of Deshaun Watson's work pretty much was in the flats or over the middle. And I have no problem with poor grades for Green Bay's inside linebackers because they were – responsible for a lot of what Deshaun was able to get over the middle.
Yeah, and let's move on to the secondary just because you touched on it already with Jaire and Josh Jackson have been Jaire's been lights out and Josh Jackson has not been bad at all. He's actually performed decently well over the last 2 weeks. But this week we got Jaire Alexander had a defensive grade of 75.2. Which is, it's a good grade. I think maybe a little low for him just because of how locked down he has been. But then you also have Josh Jackson with a 70.9, which is a good score. That's an average to above average score. And if they can get that out of Josh Jackson, then Kevin King is definitely going to be going and enjoying his money elsewhere because they will roll with that all of next season, happily. But then you got guys like Chandon Sullivan, talked about him, 63.2, which is a very average grade. He really struggled. His pass rush grade is a 37.4, which if anybody watched the game, they probably would agree with that. Raven Green had a similar score to Chandon at 62.2. Who else we got? Vernon Scott only played 13 snaps. He had a 46.5, not a great score. And then Henry Black, who, give yourself a pat on the back if you actually knew that he was on the roster before this week. He only played 6 snaps, but he had the defensive high of 87.5. And Ross, talking about this secondary, I think Chandon, I didn't hate Chandon's game. I hated his work as far as tackling and pass rushing. I thought was very bad. I thought he was fine in coverage. He gave up some catches, but he didn't give up much after it. And quite frankly, I think that's what Pettine's asking them to do. Raven Green, I thought, really got picked on. But in the same breath, Raven Green is a really nice player that they're really asking him to play outside of what he does well. And so he made some nice plays even, but I just think consistently asking him to guard, you know, these slot receivers, it's not going to end well for you. And who else? Oh, Henry Black. I was just going to touch quickly on Henry Black before I give it to you, Ross. I think if you're a young player in the NFL, you do exactly what Henry Black did. You find the ball and you go try to blow it up. And props to him. I'm sure he's earned himself more reps in practice. And I'm sure the coaches probably even raised their eyebrows a little bit after that play he made. So props to young Henry Black, and hopefully they got something there in him. Ross, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned what I thought of Jackson and Jair. Mentioned what you chanted. Raven Green had a couple of nice, you know, really nice plays. He continues to splash. Consistency, you know, and has been an issue. And as you mentioned, them being reasonable, what they actually ask him to do is a big one too. You know, they need to kind of allow him to play within himself a little bit more. And when you saw him one-on-one with slot receivers, you saw what happens to, you know, an FCS safety that you move basically to nickel. That's not what he does well. Man coverage, certainly, especially when you've got a guy that you've decided is going to be, you know, a sub linebacker. I don't know why you would have him in that situation, but today is not the day to complain about Mike Pettine. Henry Black, great play. Obviously, I thought Vernon Scott was quite a bit better than Pro Football Focus is great. I'm not sure I align with that one. I think actually Ben Fennell kind of agrees with me, frankly, as well on that. I thought he tackled well. I thought he played pretty well. But the best performance, or what I thought was really the key, Jair, of course, but Will Redmond and Adrian Amos keeping everything in front of them with Kenny Stills and Will Fuller on the other team. That was the big deal to me. And I'm interested to go actually watch the wide angle on the all 22 and watch those two work.
Yeah. And I guess I missed them. Amos had a 71.8, above average to solid, which is him in a to a T. Will Redmond 67.5, again, would align with what you just said, just very solid scores, played well yesterday. Special teams sucked. JK Scott was awesome. We don't need to talk anything more about that. Next week, we got the Vikings coming to Green Bay. Ross, true or false, the Packers win that game 100-0.
I don't know about that, but I think, you know, the 50 burger is certainly in play. You know, Minnesota has less than nothing to play for outside of just the simple fact that they don't like Green Bay. Mike Zimmer doesn't want to get fired, but it is in their best interest to lose. I think certainly you look at the trade of Yannick Ngakoue. I think that really signifies that they're ready to lose. But if you're Minnesota, why would you try to win this game? You know, and if you're Green Bay, you need this. You can't drop a home game to an inferior opponent. I mean, you know, an inferior divisional opponent, that just can't happen. So yeah, I like the Packers big this week.
Same. And I think you're a coward for not picking them by 100, because that's going to be my prediction. Just kidding. But no, I think it's definitely going to be, it should be a blowout. It's always fun to blow out the Vikings. So it should be a very enjoyable game just from a fan's perspective. But Ross, that's all we got for today. Nice little quick breakdown of that Houston game. And looking forward to that game next week against Minnesota. Ross, thank you as always for joining me, and thank you guys for listening. And until next time, go Pack, go.